Hello, my name's Jane Dacre. Welcome to the second season of Medical Women Talking. The podcasts are made up of conversations with some amazing women doctors who've had incredible careers. Being a woman and a doctor can be challenging, but these conversations are designed to be shared to help those women aspiring to fulfilling careers and to leadership roles. We hear a lot of negative stuff about medicine these days, but these inspiring stories show us that medicine can still be brilliant. Listen and be inspired. Fiona Cornish is a GP. She also has four children. She's been the president of the Medical Women's Federation and is passionate about inspiring the next generation of women doctors.
Fiona, tell me about your career. When did you first decide you wanted to be a doctor?
I think it was when I was about 14 or 15. I really liked sciences, but I didn't want to work in a lab. I wanted to work with people. So I looked around and thought that medicine would be a really good career for me to combine the science and the people. My parents weren't doctors. So I had the closest was a great uncle. But I investigated it and thought that it would be a really good career to go for.
And how did you go about getting there?
Well, I applied to Cambridge because I wanted to go to a university rather than a straight to a medical school so that I'd have more variety of people. And I thought it sounded a very good course. Of course, at that stage, one's not very experienced or clued up. So go and have a look round. I talked to people who were doctors. I didn't have much work experience, really. I did go and visit a surgeon and had a look at an operation. And I talked to a few people, but I didn't have nearly as much opportunity of work experience as people do nowadays. So it was a bit of a punt, really. So off I went to Cambridge. And of course, for the first 3 years there, you don't see any patients. It's all science. It's a very traditional course. But I really enjoyed it. And at Cambridge, you're allowed to do a different subject in your third year. So I actually did history of art. You were allowed to do any subject. So that was really interesting and gave me a different outlook on Cambridge and different subjects, meeting different people. And I found that really valuable.
So you must have been quite an academic person. Are you quite an academic person behind the scenes? It sounds like a glittering academic career so far.
Oh, well, I was a bit nerdy. Yes, double maths, chemistry and biology.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of the women I talk to do admit to me that they're girly swats behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
It's interesting how a lot
they want
of us
to be.
Are.
My school wanted me to do maths, but I said I wanted to do medicine, and I'm very glad I did. I'm sure I would have plateaued. Cambridge maths is stratospheric. I would have reached a plateau and not been able to go further.
But it, that interesting mix between people and science is something that comes through. And then also not so much being academic, but being prepared to work hard seems to come through.
Yes. I think that is somebody said, you know, you're very lucky to be blessed with the ability for toil. And, you know, I think you need to be able to work hard as a doctor. And it is good if that is something that you're willing to do. And
yeah.
And of course, you know, I did the music and the sport and everything else as well. So I'm used to my life being very busy. I was at that stage. So it just continued, really.
Okay, so then you qualified you do your clinical at Cambridge?
No, I actually went to St Thomas's. Most people in those days did go to London, and it was a very small new medical school in Cambridge. It's now the other way around. Everyone stays at Addenbrookes and nobody goes to London. But in my day, most people went to London, some went to Oxford, and I ended up at St Thomas's, which
was that?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because the Oxford and Cambridge people were slightly regarded as intruders arriving after the preclinical course. But we all mixed in. It was just more difficult to integrate than I had been expecting. But then I had a great time there, and that was good. See a different side of life, and also nice to be in London, where you know a lot of my university friends had moved to London and were all doing different things. So I shared a house with my brother, who was training to be a barrister, and another friend who was in the city. So it was a good mix.
And so when did you decide on your specialty and why?
Well, I was quite keen on paediatrics at one stage. And then I realised that general practice would really suit me because I love the variety. And I thought, well, I'm going to see everyone, all ages, male, female, some very ill, some not so ill. And because I'm keen on people, I thought, well, I'll be able to build up a relationship with my patients over years. And that, I think, is incredibly valuable and something which a doctor, it's a privilege, really, to be able to do that. So I applied to a GP training scheme, and Cambridge was a place I knew. So I applied there. And in those days, general practice was incredibly popular. There were four places on the vocational training scheme each year, and there were 100 applicants.
Wow.
So it was a fairly scary interview panel of about 10 or 12 consultants. Anyway, I was lucky enough to get a place there and went to Cambridge, and I had a very good rotation with obstetrics and gynecology, paediatrics, geriatrics, general medicine, and then a year in general practice. So I felt that was very good. The GP training scheme has changed quite a bit since then, and not everyone does paediatrics or obstetrics, but in those days we did.
And then you stayed in Cambridge?
Then I stayed in Cambridge. I was doing a GP locum. I'd just got married and then discovered rather quickly after getting married that I was pregnant. So there I was doing a GP locum. My husband was a fairly precarious academic who had done a mature PhD. So I was doing a locum in the practice because one of the partners had gone off sick, and they then needed to, he decided to leave, so they needed to replace him. And so I was in the practice anyway, and they did a rather low-key interview, and I said, but I'm pregnant. And they said, in those days, very un-PC, so they asked me, I told them I was pregnant. And then they said, are you planning to have any more children? Which you wouldn't be able to ask now, I'm sure. So I said, probably. Anyway, they were very enlightened. There was one female GP and three much older men. And they said, yes, you can be a half-time partner. Gosh. And so I was very lucky and went on to have four pregnancies, all, you know, and took 4 months maternity leave each time.
So not much maternity leave.
Well, only 3 months was paid, and we weren't really in a position to take an awful lot longer than that because my husband's career hadn't really got going. So I took 1 month of holiday stroke unpaid leave and the 3 months of paid, and then went back to work. So
I was talking to, I think the short periods of maternity leave was what we all did in those days, wasn't
yes.
it? We had to. But I was talking to another of the women that we're talking to, who said that when she was asked during her job interview whether she was going to have children, she said, oh, no. And then, of course, she got pregnant as soon as she got the job. So it was quite a difficult time then. So fantastic that they didn't bat an eyelid and that you carried on.
Well, I think it was very much helped. There were had been an all-male partnership, and then they had one woman, Pauline Brimblecombe, who was my immediate senior, and she had blazed the trail. She had two children. She was the one who had, you know, got them to think about it and to have a woman. And so I did well coming after someone who'd been the trailblazer. So I think it's very good if there's someone who's already paved the way. You can, you can benefit a lot from that if there's another woman who's been before you and done something. It makes it much easier. So it wasn't the first time they'd ever seen a pregnant doctor in the practice.
So did you, you said you worked part-time. So that's also quite unusual, is it to be able to work part-time in those days?
In those days, yes, I think it showed, because general practice was quite, could be quite flexible because it works as a small business. So I didn't job share. I think it's easier actually not to job share. I was a freestanding half-time partner who did 2.5 days a week. I did my on-call every once a week. That was part of the deal. And in those days we were on call, you took the bleep, you were on call for the night. I remember saying, do you mind if I just finish breastfeeding and then I'll come and visit you? we did whole weekends. So you'd have the bleep for the whole weekend. You'd set off for a walk with your children, not very far. And then the bleep would go. No mobile phones, had to turn around, go back to the house and then ring the answering service and be told where to go and what to do. So although I was half time, I took on the responsibilities of being on call and being buying into the partnership and doing some of the practice management. So it was it worked fine. And I think that's easier than job sharing, where you're very dependent on somebody else and you've got to fit in with their timetable as well. So when people ask me, I always say that it's better to be a freestanding person rather than a job share, if possible.
It gives you more flexibility. So have you always worked part-time then?
No, then as my children got older, I increased up to 4 days a week. So most of the, once they were, say, 8 and above, I had them quite close together, had 4 children under 5. Wow. So it was quite a military operation. then after that, I went up to 4 days a week. So we had a childminder for the first child and then went to a nanny once we had 2.
So a lot of people are intrigued about how we managed with childcare in those days. So what did you, childminder first?
Yes. And then a live-out nanny who just came on the days that I was working. And luckily for me, I mean, my practice is about 1.5 miles away and the school the children were at is between our house and the surgery. So I could take them to school on my way. And then the nanny would be there to look after the little ones or whoever wasn't at school and then collect them. And then I tried to have quite early afternoon surgeries so that I could be home by 5. And in those days, there didn't seem to be quite so much paperwork and admin and the stuff that makes the GP day very long nowadays. Mm-hmm. So it does require a bit of efficiency, though. So I was always trying to get everything done as I went along.
Yeah, no, I strive to be efficient and organised. It's not my forte, but I really work hard at it. I think we all do.
We all do. We've got, and then what really used to bug me was these men hanging around at the end of the day, just chatting and having a nice time. And you're thinking, why aren't you getting home? And then I realised that actually, if you delayed it a bit, you missed bath time.
So did you have any time for yourself?
No, I don't think I had any free time for about 10 years.
So what about keeping body and soul together? What do you do to relax and maintain your well-being?
Well, when the children were little, and I suppose there wasn't any such thing as me time, but we did go out in the evening. So we often had a babysitter. I still sang in a choir and would be quite happy to go to evening events. We didn't have any sort of qualms about leaving our children with a babysitter. And I'm afraid we always paid a babysitter rather than doing a babysitting circle where you had to go and babysit for somebody else another night. So, and the other thing that was massively helpful, my parents were enormously helpful and used to have all 4 children stay, for example, for the whole of half term. So that I, because it's difficult with holidays to work out exactly, you know, how to occupy everyone over the holidays with only 6 weeks holiday a year.
Yeah, because the other thing that I think is different now, is coming across as being different now, is that I think we could afford our own homes, and although we spent most of our money on it,
yes,
we could afford childcare. And I think that's something that appears to be much more different now, because of the relative, do I call it a relative reduction, or the lack of increase in income?
Yes, exactly. So, you know, we had our own house, good size house, when we started, so we've never had to move. And I have been very lucky in living very near to my work, so I haven't had a lot of time travelling. And one piece of advice I was given years ago was to get a cleaner. You know, you're a busy doctor, you've done all this training, you've got children, you do not want to come home and spend your time cleaning. Now, that sounds indulgent, but I think it's very good advice that I give to other people. Yeah,
no, I think it's essential. It's essential, but I struggle to see how it's affordable.
Yes.
For people coming through. So you talked about being in a choir.
Yes.
Other things. Were you able to do other stuff? Because you talked about being involved in sports and what have you when you were at university. Did that go by the wayside, or did you?
Well, it did rather. I mean, it's quite energetic running about with children, but I enjoyed tennis, which I couldn't really do very much of till the children were a bit bigger, and then I played with them, but took them to tennis lessons. So, and that's nice. So now they can all play tennis, and that is a fun thing to do. Running is quite good because you can do it in a limited time. So I've always enjoyed running. I did cross country running at Cambridge, and have done half marathons and a London marathon. But that was quite difficult. I used to do every other day. My husband would be, you know, on waking up alert while I went off for a run around the farm and then came back again. So, and of course in Cambridge you can bicycle everywhere, so that's a good way of getting exercise. And once the children were old enough, they all bicycled to school. So,
oh, that's lovely, isn't it?
Which is a very nice way to go to school. Yeah.
So you got involved in the Medical Women's Federation. Tell me about that.
I was very early on, I was instructed by Pauline Brimblecombe to go to Medical Women's Federation meeting. It was, the reason she got into it was that at the Addenbrookes Hospital, there were 6 male obstetrician consultants, and they were appointing a new one, and they appointed another man. And this really got Pauline going. And so she was very good at promoting women. So I was a diligent junior partner. I went along to a Medical Women's Federation and was very impressed with these dynamic older women who had struggled far more than I had to achieve their career goals. And so I have always been involved with it ever since then. And it was absolutely awe-inspiring, really, to meet these older women. And my husband used to think that it was a bunch of, you know, cardigans and cocoa and not a very glamorous organization, but actually then more younger people used to go, and I could really see the point of it. And so I used to go to local meetings and then national meetings, and then I got the tap on the shoulder to be an officer, and I started as the treasurer, and then was the vice president, and then the president. And I found that a really rewarding thing to do, and was very interesting.
What sort of things did you do for them? What were your greatest achievements in the MWF?
Well, there were several sides to it. One was campaigning for better arrangements for women. So a simple thing was that in the RCGP exams, if you were less than full time, you still had to do the full number of assignments for your exams and things. And we pushed for that to be pro rata. And that sort of simple thing just made people's lives better. So that sort of thing was good. We promoted women in leadership roles. We participated in things like Women in the City, which I think you were involved with.
I was a happy
you were
recipient.
A winner. Yes. So just generally promoting women in leadership positions, and the meetings of the MWF were always lovely because they had a complete mixture of specialties and a mixture of seniority. So if you went to one of their meetings, you would meet women doctors from all sorts of different areas and all different levels. And then it was a really good environment, for example, for junior doctors to do an abstract presentation or to participate in a conference, a very supportive environment, and they could cut their teeth on, you know, doing some public speaking in a very nice environment where people were going to be encouraging. It was a good way of networking, and people used to, you know, really make good contacts and for career, learning about how to develop their careers and how to be more flexible working was another thing we had a lot of campaigning for. And we were represented on the GPC. I was the Medical Women's Federation rep on the GPC for a bit. They had somebody on all the BMA committees, which was very good.
I think it's really helpful for people who are stuck in the NHS, which can feel a bit overwhelming, to have an outside professional support group. And the Royal Colleges and the Medical Women's Federation and other organisations fulfil a sort of well-being role, don't they? As well as just being political or doing whatever else they do.
And we tried to set up a mentoring scheme. Well, we called it buddying because in mentoring, some people seem to have very specific definition and criteria of mentoring. Yeah. So we called it a buddying scheme. And the idea was that a more experienced doctor could be put in contact with a more junior one and not necessarily, you know, the very senior with the very junior, because what we found was that people gain a lot from talking to someone who's just 1 or 2 years ahead of them, so that they're in touch with what they're doing and have got, you know, instead of being out of date or, well, in my day we did this, and but actually really practical advice. This is how you need to organize your rota if you're getting married next year, I suggest you do this, that or the other to make sure your rota is organized. So really quite practical things.
Fantastic. So we're coming to the end of our time now. So I was just wondering whether you had any pieces of advice to give to those people who might be listening, who are on their way up, on their way through.
Yes, well, I think get a cleaner is one. Don't delay having your children. Don't worry about being underqualified for a post. Plenty of men will apply for things when they haven't ticked all the boxes. So, enjoy your career, work hard, play hard. A full life makes you a better doctor. Take the opportunities, say yes rather than no. Make the most of your friends and colleagues. Learn to speak up. Build confidence early on. Find inspiring role models, male and female. Qualities to admire. Be the three A's, I was told. Able, amiable and available.
Any learning from bad times, mistakes, anything to avoid?
Yeah, well, qualities to avoid. Don't be grumpy or brusque with patients or not a team player, because you know we all have seen people behaving like that and it's not a good thing. So don't be one of those. Support your friends and colleagues. Connect with all staff, including nurses and allied health professionals, and think about the work culture that you're in. I had to do a 10 top tips once. I think those were the...
fantastic advice for those coming through. So Fiona, thank you so much for talking to me. That's been really, really illuminating to hear from you. So thank you. I'm sure people will love to listen to it.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Medical Women Talking. It's been a privilege to spend time with all these medical women. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this season. Don't forget, there are many other interviews in season 1.